the buzzer, McCord on its way. Oh, my goodness.
They have to get it. No timeouts. They do.
Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage, the definitive college basketball podcast.
Welcome to Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage. Our man Chris Cotter, the point guard, is a little under the weather. He's a little soft. He's not very tough. I mean, he's probably, you know, somewhere lifting weights or something and trying to get his voice ready for the weekend. But you're stuck with D Squared and myself. And D Squared.
Yo.
Interesting week so far. You were yesterday in Champaign, Illinois, and Michigan State now has lost their third consecutive game. Just your take on that game in general.
May I say, I'm going to praise as opposed to crush Michigan State. I'm going to praise Illinois. Illinois plays 80s basketball. Ball, you man, in the passing lane, on top of cutters, on top of wings, on top of post, on top of the key, denying everywhere. And Seth, I'm telling you, I've never seen Michigan State come apart over a stretch of basketball like they came apart in the first half, particularly my main man, Cassius Winston, who, by the way, I think he had a triple-double, points, assists. I know he had 10 turnovers. Michigan State did what Michigan State does. They fought back, but man.
Can you simulate Illinois' defense in your practice? I mean, is it that overwhelming how far up the line they are and how hard they pressure the ball and how they stopped you from reversing the ball? You got to make plays against those guys, right?
Yeah, they tried to back up, but you know what Illinois did a great job of as well? Again, I go back to Gene Katie, Bob Knight, help side defense. You're two passes away, get on ball side of the basket. You're one pass away, get on man side of the basket when you're opposite the ball. Illinois did it. And then Ayo hit a bunch of shots late. I mean, he made me look bad on one. Looked like he was going to dribble it off his foot. He pulled up right over Cassius Winston as I was saying this was going to end poorly and drilled the winner. He hit two in a row. Look, Michigan State is reeling, but sometimes, Seth, sometimes you got to give a little credit to the other team, and I give all the credit in the world yesterday to how they came out and played, how Illinois came out and played, and how Illinois stuck with it when they got down and finished the game. I thought it was fantastic. I did.
Yeah, and I like the way that Brad and you know, was able to keep his team together. Because look, they've struggled. He's trying to create an environment and a toughness in their program. He's trying to instill a style of basketball that's different than anyone else's. And that's a hard style of basketball to instill because you can't take – you get exposed if you take a playoff in their defensive system.
Seth, you really do. And you know what? They just kept bringing guys. A kid named Felice came in and played great. I mean, they got guy after guy. And then offensively, they play at the elbow with Georgie. And I love Georgie because he's the world's greatest dancer, apparently.
Very impressive.
He's a national champion dancer. And the dude – the dude has more personality. Like, we walked out of there after the game and said, man, I hope we get 4 years of Georgie because he is a fantastic kid, a fantastic player. Look, Izzo, let's go the other side. Not happy Nick Ward got to sit for a few minutes to start, got to sit there in the middle of it. No ball handler. I'm not saying Joshua Langford's a great ball handler, but he's a mature kid that could handle it a little bit. Nobody out there with Cassius Winston, and then instead of it being, I don't know, Jason Richardson, Miles Bridges, it was, you know, Kyle Irons trying to make plays late, and it just wasn't the same.
Yeah, they, you know, like, you think about their lineup right now. Obviously, the big guys do a nice job passing post to post and sealing and doing a lot of jazz. But, like, right now, and I love the kid. I think he's going to be a really good player. Aaron Henry's not going to beat you to a spot and make a play. Mm-mm. Kyle Irons is not going to do that. When you look at their lineup, Matt McQuaid needs time to get his shot off. They have limitations. I mean, and they won a bunch of games in a row, and it's not going to get any easier because they got Minnesota coming up, and Minnesota has got a physical front court. Amir Coffey's got some length, and, you know, it'll be interesting. By the way, the world's greatest podcast today, we're going to have Steve Wojciechowski as our guest, the Marquette head coach. They've got Villanova coming up this weekend, coming off a very tough loss to a good St. John's team led by Shamari Pons, who I call the Mariano Rivera.
The closer.
College basketball to close because he's made big shots.
Yeah.
You know, we're going to talk a little, you know, Michigan State. We're going to talk a little bit of Illinois. We're going to talk a little Tennessee. We're going to do some pick-ems later on. I mean, we're going to cover a lot of stuff. So right now, on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being you are panicking, where are you with Michigan State?
I'm not panicking. If I were a young coach, I might be panicking. But, you know, Tom's seen it all. I'm a little, I might, and I don't know how Tom does this. I saw him do this during the game, got after him, then backed off of him, then got disgusted. You know, I just think you keep working on it and you keep putting the guys like Arns and McQuaid and Henry and these guys in positions where they got a repetition, do it over and over and over again so that maybe they can make plays. But I'll say this, Seth. I'll tell you this. Say whatever you want. I know it's three-game losing streak, but, Seth, it is really hard to beat Michigan State. Like, Brad Underwood came over to me. We did the post game, and then he just sat and hung out with me for a few minutes, like 5 minutes after, while the crowd was rushing.
Good dude to talk ball with, too.
Yeah, great dude. And he's like, man, they're just hard to finish off. You know, I mean, Indiana, yeah, they, you know, 1-for-9 from Nick Ward. They didn't shoot free throws at even 40%. Okay, fine. And it goes overtime. They're just, we can say what we want. We can put dirt on Michigan State, but damn, are they hard to beat. Yeah. Oh, are they hard to beat?
I agree. I just think that, you know, their margin of error now because of their lack of depth and without Langford's 15 points a game.
Hard.
And he also had the ability, if you got underneath him, to just rip it and go, and, you know, he could elevate enough to get a shot. Now, another team, and I'm going to give you a little stat right here. I'm not a big stat guy. You know, I mean, I'm not a numbers guy. I can't remember numbers. I'm not good at it. You know, you're kind of a cerebral guy to
sure
read stuff. But you know the last three Final Fours? Last three Final Fours. Starters, 22 seniors, 21 juniors, 10 sophomores, and 7 freshmen.
Who does that favor?
Well, the team I'm about to bring up is Tennessee this year's Villanova. Mature, roles are defined, can play in the half court, can play in transition, hard to score against, can throw it on the block and beat you, can shoot the three, has a good leader in Jordan Bone. He's not Jalen Brunson. But, I mean, are they that same elk?
Can I add something to it?
Certainly.
Swagger. Think about.
You love their swagger.
I love it. I love the fact that Penny Hardaway, you know, had to go after Barnes. I love the fact that everybody had to apologize to, what was it, Florida, for the Gator Chomp. I love, you don't win without a little bit of swag, man. I mean, look, we all want to be choir boys. We all want to sit in the front row at church. We
you don't want to be a choir boy.
I'm reading the Bible cover to cover. What are you talking about? I forget where I'm at. Leviticus. I'm in the third book. What are you talking about? I'm rolling on the Bible. But you're right, I don't. But every 6 weeks I get a wild hair, I got to do something stupid, and it doesn't work out well. But anyway, I digress. These guys have swagger, man. They have an edge to them. And I don't know what the edge was for Villanova. I don't know what the edge is for most teams that win, but I know they got it. And everybody that's a champion has it, Seth. And if you don't think Tennessee is a Final Four team, then I don't know who the hell you think is a Final Four team, because that team's got everything you want, including swag, baby.
I'll tell you one thing they don't have.
Tell me.
They don't have a freshman that scored a bucket for them this year.
That is interesting. What do you make of that?
Well, they had an
bad recruiting?
A bad class. You know, they had these upper class. Hard to recruit when you have your team returning, mm-hmm, because guys want immediate gratification. They don't want to sit and wait. And you know, you've got a group of guys that they developed. There was a time in the middle of last season, I was at Knoxville, and Barnsley was on his guys, we need a point guard. And Rob Lanier, to his credit, said, Coach, we have a point guard. We've just got to stay with him. That's Jordan Bone. And Jordan Bone is the Xavier Simpson, the Trey Jones, the Ashton Hagans. You go around the country this year, there's a bunch of little point guards that are really good leaders, that have toughness, that just play ball. Now, he doesn't have the running hook, Xavier Simpson.
Nobody does.
Who has the running hook, Xavier Simpson?
Nobody.
But, I mean, they, you know, I think he brings this whole thing together, and they make enough shots. They got, you know, Jordan Bowden, who's making shots. Lamonte Turner's back. They got, you know, to me, Kyle Alexander gives him some shot blocking. You're right. I mean, I just think, you know, we're so enamored with Duke. Then we get enamored with, can Virginia beat Duke? Then we get enamored with, you know, we're not talking about Gonzaga enough because, you know, they're off the beaten path. That Tennessee, they're not beating people. They are smacking people. I mean, they are, I mean, you're talking in league play, home road, 20 points. Thank you very much. Kind of like another team in that league right now that all of a sudden has got their mojo, that we saw them in the summer. They, and again, I go back to coaching. hardest thing to do in coaching when the expectations are not met. And after the Duke game, the obituary for Kentucky was a tad bit premature. Addition by subtraction, they lose Quade Green, and they get better. Roles are defined. E.J. Montgomery, 11 points last night, 13 rebounds, 5 offensive rebounds. I've always said he's their X factor. The SEC, Kentucky, Tennessee, is that what it's going to come down to?
I think so, and I did Kentucky last week, and the thing I loved about it, Seth, I loved it, and I've been raving about it all
DJ.
Week. Yeah, middle of the game, they're not rolling. They're not playing well. They're playing okay, but they're missing shots. And a couple defensive lapses, I think they're down 10 or 12, and at a timeout, P.J. Washington does not let his teammates go to the bench. He rips them a new one right there on the court, and the interesting thing about that, Seth, and you know this very well, it's one thing to be a leader, but you got to have some followers and got to have some listeners with you. And there was no smirking. There was no, oh, man, there was no get out of here. It was nothing but respect, and it changed the game. It did, and I loved that because that is what you want out of any team, and it's so rare that you get a player coach team, and you're thinking about Kentucky where all these guys ought to be into themselves. Man, P.J. Washington was not having it, and it was the most impressive thing I have seen this year in college basketball, him ripping his team, but his teammates also accepting, listening, reacting positively to it. It was great, great.
And you know, it's not the only time it's happened this year. Ashton Hagans got after Kelton Johnson a couple of weeks ago, and you know they hold each other accountable, and it could be a different guy on a different day. And there, that shows you, even though they're young, they do have some upperclassmen. I think, boy, Nick Richards playing better, but E.J. Montgomery is playing really well. But this is a team that, you know, maybe because they all share the same journey, Cal coaches them really, really hard, and he challenges them to coach each other and challenge each other. And, you know, he has no problem with them getting after each other. Like, you know, some people would be worried about the perception. Oh, did you see P.J. Washington? He dropped the F-bomb challenging, you know. No, that's who we are. This is how we roll. We all listen and we respect it and we move on. And that's why they're good. I'll tell you a team that's not moving on, though. Kansas.
Mm.
The field took a huge step forward yesterday. The field, I mean, you got to win your home games. Kansas State did that. It's more just, and like people, I joke about it now, but like, this is just not a very good Kansas team. They have no one to throw into the ball in the block. Their guard play is spotty at best. You can't rely on LeGerald Vick. You know, those young guards are going to be inconsistent. Lawson's asked to do a ton. They, at times look really good defensively, played a bunch of zone yesterday, which I thought was a really good coaching move. Because Kansas State really struggled shooting, but I think they might have, I wouldn't say stayed in it too long. I mean, just Kansas State finally started to get a little dribble penetration, but Kansas just does not look like, I don't know if it's going to be Iowa State. I don't know if it's going to be Kansas State. I mean, the fighting, you know, Scott Drews are 6-2 or whatever they are, 7-2. I mean, they just don't look that good.
They don't, but they have a stretch right here where they can get a little healthy. They got, you know, a bad Oklahoma State team
right
at home. I wanted to like the Horned Frogs when I saw them in person more than I do. And then West Virginia comes in, and that all sets up a meeting at Texas Tech. So, and then a rematch with, you know, Kansas State. So I'm sitting here thinking to myself, all right, I agree with you. This may be the least Kansas team that I've seen in however long you want to go back. But as you well know, league play gives and it takes, right? I mean, league play gives you opportunity.
Who, when, and where.
Yeah. And now, you know what? You got three games from the 9th to the 16th, and then you got a week off before you play Texas Tech. So, Seth, my warn to you be careful when you go on national television and espouse how the field is going to come back, because if Kansas wins those three games, guess what's going to happen to some other teams? They're going to lose.
Yeah, I mean, Iowa State's probably roster. I think their roster. You see Cam Lard the other day. He was really good. He changes him. He gives him a little pop coming off of those ball screens. I think that you know, he gives him some shot blocking. He's healthier. Winnington has been much better. He's, you know, and I give Steve Prohm credit, because when I was at Murray State doing those games, Steve called me and we just started talking about his team a little bit. And, you know, I asked him, I said, Winnington, what are you going to do? You know, he's come back. He's not fitting in. These young guys have stepped up. He goes, Coach, he came back. He's my guy. It's not on him. It's on me. I got to figure out a way to get him to understand his role changed a little bit because, you know, we have more good players, but that I still want him to remain aggressive and attack. And, I give Steve a lot of credit because right now the kid's playing really well. So
yeah,
the field
but,
is
know, the no. field, but again, Kansas is only one game out.
I know. We overreact to those losses. Well, if I don't get too happy, then the haters won't call me a hater. It's going to be an interesting week with, you know, the Big 12, obviously, the Big 10, seeing what happens.
Can I ask you a question about the Big 12?
You can ask me anything.
I get this all the time. Let me ask you, why is Arizona so bad? I know Jeter's been out, but why are they so bad?
Well, Arizona's bad because they lost their whole recruiting class and they're under an NCAA investigation.
But the investigation doesn't impact on the court.
No, but it impacted their recruiting.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, all right, so boom, they're not good. Washington's the best team in the league right now. They're undefeated in the league.
Yeah.
They've got some upperclassmen. The zone's hard to play against. It's like a junior James Dean, you know, here in Washington.
Yeah.
They've got good players. They got really good players.
Are they good enough to where all of a sudden Elite Eight?
I don't think they're that good because every really good teams they played against, they lost to. Now, they played Gonzaga right to the bitter end. The zone is an equalizer in the tournament because in the second game of the tournament, I always feel like that zone, if played well in, you know, 36 hours, it's hard to prepare for because you're not, you know, you have to do some different things than you might do just for a 2-3 zone. But they're good. I mean, Jalen Norvell's good.
But how do we get to this spot? How do we get to this
position?
That's
the amazing thing to me. I tell you, that's the biggest. You talk about world-class universities.
Yes.
I mean, the Conference of Champions.
Yes.
I mean, that's the greatest guard I've ever seen in my whole life.
Yes.
And it is amazing that you could have a conglomeration. Oregon loses Troy Brown early. Bol Bol gets hurt. So you figure that out. Oregon State's just kind of hanging in there. Arizona State's got good players. Zion Cheatham's really good. Lugans Dort has kind of leveled off a little bit because he can't shoot. But if you look at the depth, Stanford, bad. UCLA, not good. Cal, horrific. Washington State, bad. They have no ways to play themselves in. So I look at Arizona State's got two quality wins. They got a Syracuse win, and they got a Kansas win. So, I mean, you know, they have played won enough games to have a chance to get an at-large. There's not another team in that league that has a chance to get an at-large, including in – maybe Washington because they're gonna win whatever.
They're 18-4.
Yeah, but they haven't beaten anyone in the field.
No, they've won 11 in a row. You want to say okay, major conference that puts you in, right?
Coach,
I know. Don't go there.
With me.
I was
11-5 in the ACC. Beat Duke and Carolina. Didn't get in.
I know. I'm teaching to the wrong guy, but it's just you sit there and you go, I don't know. Like, I watched Arizona State last week, whatever it was, Thursday, and I saw two teams that, you know, I mean, you're used to at least Arizona being a team that is, all right, let me ask you another question. The news came out, maybe it's true, maybe it's not, I don't know, but all those guys had it, Pete Thamel and them. Arizona's being investigated based on the trials this summer. What is your thought on that?
I think that eventually those wiretaps are going to come into play, and I think eventually that the things that Mark Schlabaugh reported a long time ago to some extent are going to become fact, and it's going to be an upheaval in the West Coast college basketball.
All right.
No, I think other people are going to be brought into play. I mean, I think they're, you know, look, I mean, guys have become state's evidence. Who knows how many schools are on that wiretap? I mean, we heard a smattering, and there was a good number. I mean, it was, you know, there was 8 to 10 schools that were mentioned. Now, you have to improve that. You have to prove some of the things that were said. But, I mean, the conversations were real. And, I mean that's just real. And I think it's going to, you know, now the end is near to this investigation. And now that these tapes are going to be part of the next – set of the Brandon the Dawkins appeal and Merle Code's appeal, when those tapes start to come in, they start putting people up on the stand, you can scream and yell all you want until you have to put your hand on that Bible. And then you got a choice. You're either going to obviously indict yourself by falsifying you know,
by lying.
By lying, yeah. Or you're going to say, you know, swallow it and say, you know what, I lasted seven more months, or I made a year, another $5 million out of this thing, but it's all caught up to me. I mean, that's just the way it is.
Yeah, interesting.
You know what?
Hey, tell me.
Coming up, we're going to have Steve Wojciechowski come join us. But first, let's get a little word from our good friends at Vivid Seats. You know, think about this, D squared. Yes. Usually we get the freebies, you know.
I mean,
there's one thing about it. You can pick up the phone most times, get into most arenas, get a pretty good seat, get a media pass. But there are times that there are no freebies available. Like, I'm going to see Billy Joel on his 70th birthday. No freebies. So, I mean, like, you know what? Having the right venue to get a good seat to a sporting event and having that ability, man, I'll tell you one thing, that's good. That it doesn't get any better than that.
Seth, I literally sat on the top row of the old Hoosier Dome to watch the Colts 100 years ago, and I vowed I will never trust anybody other than a company like Vivid Seats or a company that I know is reputable, because I didn't want to sit there. And the reason I didn't want to sit there is because it was too long a walk up. I'm old. I'm fat. I don't want to do that.
Don't settle for waiting in line. Shop for tickets to every game with the official ticket partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats. Vivid Seats, you can see your seats before you buy them, and they're backed by 100% buyer guarantee.
You may have to find another way to spend your time besides waiting in line, but you'll be closer to the action than ever before. Head on over to Vivid Seats, the largest independent ticket marketplace around. Spend less time in the waiting room, more time in the great seats of your choice. Don't buy just any seat. Get a Vivid Seat.
Get a Vivid Seat.
Yeah. Marquette head coach Steve Wojciechowski, 19-4, 10th rate, coming off of a tough one, which happens in conference play. Wojo, how are you? Thanks for joining us. When you get beat, you got beat at the end, St. John's got you, happens in league play. Are you angry thrower, cusser, yeller, as I was, or a philosopher, teacher, educator, as Seth was?
Exactly. You think of me, educator.
That's a loaded question. You know, obviously, credit to St. John's. I mean, they deserve to win. I didn't think our group gave the effort that was worthy of winning. And, you know, for the most part this year, we've been a really connected, high-energy, spirited, resilient group. And St. John's took the fight to us, plain and simple. And, you know, I don't know if I'm a yeller, screamer, philosopher. You know, I think you got to tell the truth. And St. John's deserved to win the game, and we did not. And we have to learn from those things and try to change it.
You know, it's interesting you said that you were disappointed in their effort, because, I mean, you're coming off St. John's got you early in the season at St. John's, and, you know, that becomes a little bit of a revenge game. Is it a bad matchup game because they play all those guards and guys are out of position? Or is it just that, you know, sometimes, you know, light bulb goes on and your guys just aren't where you'd like them to be?
I think both can be true. You know, I think number one, I think St. John's is a difficult matchup, not only for us, but for most teams, because of the way they space the floor. Their five-man can be argued he's their best three-point shooter, and their guards can really post. So they put you in some difficult matchups on the defensive end, and then offensively, they're still good off the dribble, really good in isolations, and Shamori Ponds can take over a game. As we saw last night. So, you know, I want to give credit to St. John's. By the same token, I think our group is learning to handle the fact that we're going to get everybody's best shot. And that's not necessarily a situation we've been in. Not that teams haven't wanted to beat us, but a win against us means more this year. And, you know, sometimes the team that you watch on film when you're in this position is not the team you're going to play. And, you know, you can talk about it and reinforce it, but, you know, at some point we got to learn that lesson.
You know, I want to kind of get away from the game and talk about something I noticed with your team that I think is really cool. I'm watching Marcus Howard go off against Butler, and sometimes a guy has big nights and the teammate resents him, or there's, you know, he's a pig and all that kind of – Man, I thought it. I've thought all year it is really cool, the esprit de corps that your team has, even though you've got a guy. I know Hauser's a great and all that, but you got a guy who's really doing it, Coach. And I think that's a testament to you and the culture that you've built. I really do, and I think it's very cool. And I want to commend you and your team for that.
No, I appreciate that, and you know, certainly we've had a very selfless group, the overwhelming majority of the time. I mean, this has been a great group to be around. I love the guys in our program, and it says a lot about them, as you mentioned, Coach. That when you know you got a guy who's going off, that you know there can be resentment. You know, I've been on and seen teams and been around teams where that happens. That hasn't happened with our group, and Marcus has had a spectacular year, and our guys support him, our guys help him, and that's been one of our strengths throughout the course of the season.
Steve, when you look at your team, you say we can be really good if we what?
Well, we got to, you know, there's a number of things. The very first thing that you always come back to is attitude. We have to be as connected and competitive as we've been for the most part of the year. You know, I think we've been really competitive and we've been connected. Even when things haven't necessarily looked like they're going to go our way in games, we've been resilient. We got to get back to being that hungry group. And then, you know, obviously from a basketball standpoint, our defense has been significantly improved. That's got to stay constant. And then on the offensive end is taking care of the ball and striking the right balance between inside and outside play.
We try to give people a little insight, you know, from a coaching standpoint on this. We call it the world's greatest podcast.
But exactly.
That may be understating it. What do you do now? What, you lose a game, you know. You balance rest, and you balance tired, and you balance it. But you also got to get better, and you also got to prove your point. Take us through what will happen today with Marquette, next couple of days to get you ready as you move forward.
And to play Villanova.
Right.
Yeah. Thanks for reminding me.
Right.
You know, today actually is a mandated NCAA day off. That's not how I would choose. For right. It to be, but you know we have to live by the rules that we have. But you know tomorrow we'll probably go twice, and it's not all physical; it's mental and emotional. You know, because I think your head and your heart needs to be in the right place before your execution can be there, and understand like why we weren't as good as we've been, and meet those truths head on. And then we got to get on to Villanova. I mean, this is, you got to get on to the next play. As you guys know, in conference play, once you take a realistic and honest look at where you're at, you got to move on and start preparing for obviously a Villanova team and program that is, you know, as good as it gets right now.
You know, you talked about the meeting you're going to have with them, or a couple of practices you're going to have with them tomorrow. How does your group, I mean, obviously, you're going to coach your guys hard because you have a real relationship with them. When people have to understand, you can challenge and push your guys as hard as you want as long as they know you genuinely care about them as people and, you know, want to help them get somewhere they can't get themselves. But, you know, so how much of St. John's will you cover tomorrow, say, early, compared to kind of flipping the page and moving ahead to, all right, here are the three or four things today we've got to really focus on to get ready for Villanova? I mean, are we going to look in a rearview mirror first because you really haven't had a chance to put your hands on your guys post St. John's?
Yes, we will. And, you know, again, as Dan mentioned, you have to be cognizant of the time. But I think it's really important when you don't play to the level that you feel like you're capable of playing is to understand why. And that can't be acceptable. And we're not going to accept it, and we're going to try to change it. You know, if we lose a game given our best effort, then you shake the other guy's hands. Right. But if we don't control the things that we can control to the best of our ability, then we got to look in the mirror and make no excuses. Once we're finished with that, we'll get on to Villanova and start studying them and preparing for them. So in the morning, we'll do some St. John's feedback. We'll get on to Villanova in the afternoon. We'll lace them up and start preparing.
You know, you can tell for people listening out there, it's a mandated off day for the players, but there ain't no mandated off date or whatever the hell you say it for the coaches, you know. If When you look, and I assume one of your coaches has already been talking about Villanova. Let's get into that just for a second. From a coach's perspective, what are you guys seeing in Villanova?
Well, you know, again, Jay's done an incredible job, and they have such a strong culture. And I think really since the Penn game, and you know, after games, what we do is we watch the game we just played, and then we start on the next team we're preparing for. And Brett Nelson has the scout, so he walked through, you know, in depth, you know, who Villanova is. And they are who we think they are. They're a team that's not going to beat themselves. They're a team that's going to compete and play for one another on each possession. And they're led by two elite seniors in Phil Booth and Eric Paschal. I mean, those two kids have been absolutely phenomenal. And, I can't speak for Jay, but from the outside looking in, they give you the type of senior leadership you need to have a special season, and also to have a special season coming off, you know, a lot of transition in that program. It says a lot about those two kids and their program in general.
Is it their toughness? They play with obviously great spacing, and they're hard to score against, and they're going to shoot 50% of their shots from the three. And, there's kind of an excellence and simplicity of some of the things they do. But are they just a lot tougher mentally, emotionally, physically for 40 minutes than people just realize when you just casually watch them?
I think without question. I mean, I think their toughness and togetherness are their two greatest strengths. I mean, and I'm saying that, and they have great players. But, you know, who they are collectively is so impressive, and it speaks to their culture. You know, I think one of the cool things in watching them, and you try to learn from, like, they don't beat themselves. And that sounds simple, but that's a hard thing and a hard habit to build in a program. And, that's what makes them so good.
When they lost to Furman and they lost to Penn, you guys, Dan and I know better than you, Steve, but I mean, like, getting your team back after playing that way and not playing at the level of your expectation and not being the team you envisioned them to play. That's a hard thing to do, to keep your team moving forward. I mean, that's a gift, don't you think?
Yeah, they're, without question. I mean, I think, you know, the ability to, you know, learn from adversity and use that to make you better, which they certainly have done, is impressive. I think also not enough with, you know, it's a long season. You can get better over the course of the season. Yeah. So, you know, they were trying to figure it out early in the year. Well, they got it figured out now, and certainly going to be a tough challenge for us.
Coach, I'm going to talk about you guys for just a second. When 19-4, we always ask coaches that are kind of on the bubble, do you talk about the NCAA tournament? Well, in your case, you know, you're two games out with a chance to be one game out with a win on Saturday, a chance to win your 20. Does a coach in your position talk about seeding? Do you talk about championship? Or are you just, hey, we got to get better and we got to move on to the next game?
You know, our focus, you know, since the very beginning is, you know, we is getting better and improvement. And, we haven't tried to get outside of the 200 feet in front of us and focus on what we need to do to be our very best today and how we can get better. And we got to maintain that focus because, you know, again, momentum is fragile. And so I think sometimes if you get to looking too far ahead, then you're not focused on the most important thing and the thing you can impact the most, which is today.
That's so good. It's so good because with social media and all the static around your program, getting your guys to stay in the present and block out all the other stuff. Hey, how is it coaching the two brothers? I mean, I had a chance to have Joey with me in Italy. He was hurt. But, I mean, those kids just seem like unbelievably good teammates. And, you know, I know how Joey is. I mean, how much fun is that for those two kids and for your team?
Well, I think it's awesome, first and foremost, for Joey and Sam to be able to play together. I mean, they're, you know, as close as you can be. And they're both winners. I mean, they were raised right. They play the game the right way. They're winners. And, I think Sam obviously has had a terrific career here. I think at times he's underappreciated nationally for how good a college player he is. But he's one of the best kids I've ever been around. And Joey's got a high level of potential. And, you know, we're asking a lot of him as a freshman. And he's delivered for the most part. And he's a winner, too, and a great kid. So, you know, I love coaching both those guys, and I'm fortunate to be their coach.
Hey, Coach, last thing. We'll let you go. You look around the landscape of college basketball. We always talk about all of us, hey, you know, back in the day. But it's changed. I mean, there's a lot more dribble. There's a lot more shooting, a lot more spread. Thinking from when you came into Duke and how offense was run, and to now how offense was run, you have any thoughts on that, the differences?
Well, yeah, number one, I couldn't play in today's game.
No, you could play in today's game, but
with the way the rules are and freedom of movement on defense and
yeah, you couldn't play in today's game. You're right. You'd have been out with the arm bar and the hand check. You'd have been done.
I couldn't coach in today's game. We'd foul out quicker than we used to.
Leader in one stat, fouls per 40 minutes, and that's about it. But no, when I played, the game was more motion, you know, so it was more off ball. Screening and cutting and those types of things. And today it's, you know, there's just, you see a million ball screens, in each and every game. And it's a very difficult thing to decide how to guard, especially when you're playing teams that have difficult matchups. But, again, I don't want to go down the rabbit hole of, you know, our time was better. It's just different.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
I'm not sure the game's going back at any point to the way it was with motion and movement. I think the ball screen is here to stay.
Did you guys ball screen? We never ball screened at Indiana in my 17 years or 16 years there. Did you guys ball screen at Duke back in the day?
When I played?
Yeah.
Not too much. I mean, we did a little bit for Trajan, but that's not, I mean, me coming off a ball screen wasn't going to put any defense in a pickle.
You didn't draw two?
So, you know, we did for Trajan, and but not as much as it is now. And that really changed when Jay Will got to the program, and you just put Boozer, Battier, and Williams in the middle of the floor and ran a roll in the place, and something good was going to come from it. But the game has changed, and I think it'll continue to stay similar to what we see now.
Great stuff, man. Appreciate you, Coach. Thank you very much.
Thanks so much, man.
World's greatest podcast.
World's greatest podcast. There you go, babe.
All right. There you go, Seth. Your guy, Wojo.
Wojo, that's good. I remember when he rolled into five-star basketball camp in Pittsburgh. Coach Mullis rolled him in there.
Can I tell you a story?
Please. Can I stop you?
Yep, if you want, because this is...
That's a good story.
Here's the deal. I get to five-star. Woj is there as a player. Howard Garfinkel grabs me, puts me on his golf cart, says, I got to show you players. Perfect guy for Bobby Knight. I go watch him for 2 minutes. I said, I can't bring that guy back to Indiana. I can't do it. I should have brought that guy back to Indiana. That was a total, like, we didn't even recruit him. And I don't know if he would have come, but damn, Garf brought me, sat me at the frickin'.
You got on the golf cart, huh?
Yes. Only other time I was on a golf cart was when I was a player there, had to leave early to have knee surgery, and he told me I was too much of a blank and would never play at Indiana. But I made a comeback.
He was right on part of that.
Yeah, he was. Nice. Don't die on us here.
Yeah, really.
You can't.
I'm past that.
Actually,
now. I'm making my comeback.
If you die on the world's greatest podcast, it will probably be listened to more than any other time, so feel free.
Yeah, it's good for our numbers. Good for our numbers. D squared.
Yep.
You know what it's time for? Our favorite time of the year. Pick 'em. Pick 'em, because you are the king of pick 'em. In fact, you pick something every single day to help people make money. It's the most amazing thing in the world, but. Gabe, you know, do you have some games for us to pick this weekend?
Our first game coming up on Saturday, number 19, Wisconsin, at number 7, Michigan, at noon. Who you got, Dan?
Oh, man, Michigan. I'm going to take him at home, but I like me some Wisconsin. They're back playing like Wisconsin, but I did the first game. Michigan got stuck, couldn't make a shot. Iggy Brazdeikis could not, he didn't even scratch, he didn't score. But I'd look for revenge. I think Michigan, not playing great, by the way. Neither is Michigan State, obviously. But I'm going to take Michigan only because it's at home, Seth Greenberg.
Yeah, I've got Michigan at home. And I can't, Michigan is one of the one teams that can play half one-on-one and not have to dig down and scrape and help and run those guys off the three-point line a little bit. And, you know, they shot, Michigan shot the ball pretty well yesterday. Brazdeikis obviously shot it really well. Poole made some shots. I do worry about Michigan's inability to really show any consistency in what they're doing offensively, but at home, this is a game Michigan's got to win. You can't lose home games.
All right, next one. Number 14, Villanova at number 10, Marquette at 2:30 on Saturday. Seth, who you got?
This is an ouch game right here.
Ouch.
Now. I mean, this is an ouch game because you got Marquette coming off that loss where they just weren't really in sync the first half against St. John's, and then you got Villanova that just does Villanovian type things. I mean, you got two guys who basically score all the points in Booth and Pascal, and, you know, Gillespie's been very, very good. But I look at this as a, I wouldn't say desperate, but this is a red letter game for Marquette. This is a game of Marquette's going to be a serious team that can win games in the NCAA tournament. At home, they've got to beat Villanova. And I like Marquette. I think they've got greater depth. I think that obviously we hear about Howard, but the Housers are really, really good. Johns, they're much improved defensively. I'm going to go with Marquette.
I have people that actually come up to me at games, and they like our pick segment, and a few of them told me they bet on our pick segment. So I'm going to take this a little more seriously than what I might have otherwise. Because I don't want to lose anybody money, but I don't know the line or anything like that. But I'm going to take Villanova.
Ooh.
And, ooh. Seth, and it's the anti what I just said about the Michigan Wisconsin game. You want to take Marquette at home this time of year, playing for a title, playing down the stretch. You got to win your home games. But man, Seth, I watched Villanova a week or so ago come into Hinkle, and they look so good every time I watch them play, Seth. And you said a Gillespie with 30 the other night. Maybe that's another weapon to go along with the two guys that are rolling. I just sit and think, I don't, until further notice, I'm starting to feel like Villanova is the Patriots. I just can't pick against them right now, Seth.
Jay Wright is definitely the GOAT.
He is. I mean, he is, Seth. And how do you pick against Villanova? I'm not saying they're going to win out and all that kind of stuff and win another national championship. But, man, is it hard to pick against Villanova right now in my little ridiculous world.
And they're so fundamentally sound.
Yeah.
But they're due for, like, they've played. This is a team that lost to Furman.
Yeah.
This is a team that lost to Penn.
Yeah.
But you're right. I mean, and I'll tell you, you talk about upperclassmen. See, you know, I mean, like, those upperclassmen, they've basically embraced the pressure of, and Pascal's playing himself into an NBA draft position.
What's Gillespie doing? I'm not NBA, but I mean.
No, it's amazing.
Yeah.
What he's done is incredible. And I was in Jay Wright's office when they decided to offer Colin Gillespie. You know, it was, in some ways, it was a little bit of a favor to Buddy Gardler, the old high school coach at Cardinal O'Hara. And it's just saying, look, this guy, he's never going to hurt you. He knows how to play. He's tough. You know, he gets what you want from him. This dude is really good.
Yeah.
He might, you know, he's going to be packing point guards. You know what I mean by that? I had a kid named Reggie Cohn who played for me in South Florida. By the time he graduated, I recruited a point guard every class after he came. 3 years in a row. So I'm meeting with him senior for breakfast one day, his senior year. He goes, Coach, do you understand? I sent three packing. I go, what are you talking about, Reggie? He goes, every year you burn a point guard. Every year I kicked his and every year they transferred.
That's awesome. Isn't that great?
Yeah, it was great.
That's what he's going to do. You're right. That's what he's going to do. Packing point guards.
Packing them up. Send them on the way.
That's awesome.
All right, Gabe.
Next one. Number 16, Louisville at number 22, Florida State at 4 p.m. on ESPN2 Saturday. Dan, who you got?
I'm going to take Florida State, and I'm not sure why. I think one of the great jobs this year has been done by Chris Mack, restructuring his roster, bringing in some fifth-year guys, and they've played great. Little slip against North Carolina. But, you know, I'm watching. I think Florida State plays too many guys, but I'm not the coach, so I'll defer to Leonard. But I think when Florida State gets in passing lanes, they're dynamite, and I'm going to take Florida State again at home. Not going to be easy. Should be down the stretch. Should be a grunted-out game. But I've seen Florida State in person. If they don't guard on the wings, and I don't like Florida State, but when they guard on the wings, I love Florida State.
Yeah, I've got, you know, Florida State Kofor's back, which is good. I mean, Cabangali has 18 off the bench. I mean, you know, you just don't know who's going to beat you each and every night, you know, for Florida State. At home, coming off a good win against Syracuse, beating Syracuse on the road was, I thought, was a huge step forward, showed the poise to attack the zone. I've got Florida State.
Last one, the big one, number 2 Duke, number 3 Virginia at 6 p.m. on ESPN. Saturday, Seth, you're there for game day. Who you got?
Yeah, I mean, this is interesting. So I've watched this game back about 3 times. It shows you, you know, where my life's at.
Level of life. Come on.
I mean, it's really ridiculous. And Virginia was, like, unlike Virginia. I mean, look, Duke's going to shoot a high percentage because they put it in those two guys' hands in the middle of the floor. They drove it, and they got fouled, or they scored. That's just what they do. But they were, like you thought they would really shrink the court. You thought they would really make them shoot jump shots. They didn't do that. There was no Trey Jones. How much is Trey Jones' impact going to have in terms of his pressure pushing Virginia out? Because Virginia got good shots. Virginia just created matchup problems by creating a switch, and then basically whomever they wanted to get matched up with Bolden, they got the ball to that guy in a switch, and then he drove him. I mean, that was a 2-point game. My gut feeling is Duke's going to win this game. I thought they looked by BC a little bit the other day. But I think that they are so good defensively with Trey Jones on the floor. And Kyle Guy's been struggling, and Virginia looks tired to me.
I'm gonna take Duke, too. When I look at Duke, I see energy. I see enthusiasm. I see want to. I see toughness. It's not like when they had Jabari Parker when I thought he was a sieve and they were going to lose, which they did. I love this Duke team. I love their energy. They seem like a connected group, and I mean, we're contractually obligated to talk about Zion Williamson every single 5 minutes, and he's earned it. I mean, he's really has. Last time, what was it? 57 points between the two kids.
Yeah, 57 to the 72.
Yeah, and I don't know that they'll do that again, but I'm not sure they're going to have to. I wonder, Ty Jerome healthy?
No.
Yeah, we'll see. I like Duke. I think Duke is a – let me put it to you this way, Seth. As the commissioner of rushing the court, I'm going to say this. If Virginia beats Duke, I'm rushing the court. I don't care what the records are. I'm rushing. I'm on the court. I'm taking selfies.
Wow.
Yeah.
I don't know. But yeah. I mean, Virginia won the ACC and the tournament last year.
I know.
Year.
Act I like
mean,
you've been there. I know. It's controversial.
I know. But that's not uncommon for you. See, here's my thing. There's been a modernization of Duke.
Yes.
Here's my thing. Duke is likable right now.
Mm-hmm.
Duke is all over social media. Duke, you know, you see players interviewing players. They've created this image, whether it's with, you know, the show Everything Earned or Earn Everything, whatever it is. But, you know, ESPN Plus can never plug ESPN Plus enough. But they have – there's been a modernization of them, and it started with Zion Williamson, and they do play with a great enthusiasm. Having said that, I don't think they're going to win national championship. Because I think shooting and free throw shooting eventually is going to catch up with them and their inability to execute in the half court. But I've got Duke in this game.
Yeah.
So, and you know what? If you're listening to this podcast, the world's greatest podcast, obviously Chris Cotter a little bit under the weather. Wherever you download your podcasts, please download us on Apple Podcasts or ESPN Podcasts or wherever you do. Rate us because it's absolutely phenomenal. I can even help you rate us if you'd like. And I'd like to thank our sponsors from Vivid Seats. Great to have them on board. If you need a good seat to a great event, it's all about Vivid Seats. D squared.
Yo.
Where are we going this weekend?
We got a big weekend. We already got a gag gift sent to us from IU fans that the equipment manager in Indiana Open will be there tomorrow. Somebody sent one of those things that explodes all over you when you open it, so they're very excited to have me in Bloomington. And then on Saturday, it's Minnesota at Sparty, Seth. Sparty.
Ooh, man.
Oh, man.
That's
I'm going to stay away from Izzo.
Yeah. I think – is my man Nick Ward, is he a little bit in the doghouse right now?
Apparently, the 1-for-9 free throw shooting and the lack of, defense in the post has put him – in skivvies to start the game. He sat on the bench. But, that's where I'm going to be. Where are you going to be?
We are going to beautiful Charlottesville, Virginia. We're going to kind of hang out Friday night, dinner at the Aberdeen Barn, one of my favorite hole-in-the-wall kind of steak places in beautiful Charlottesville. And then we'll watch a little ball. I mean, it should be good. One thing I'll tell you, the game days at Charlottesville have been unbelievable. I mean, Michigan State, the environment was great, but Charlottesville will be just as crazy and that much more fun. So excited about it. Hey, you know what? It's another week. I tell you, it's winding down, D-Squared.
Can't wait. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage. You can listen and subscribe to all ESPN podcasts in the Listen tab of the ESPN app, including the latest from the NBA and the Hoop Collective podcast, available in the ESPN app or Apple Podcast.